Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me, as always, to be honest, Vivek Jacob, Complex Sports Canada. What's good, man?
Some things don't change. Happy to be here, man.
Listen, this is a star-driven league and everything like that. Obviously, contracts don't matter, commitments don't matter, nothing like that matters. But friendships don't matter, man. And you're my guy. I've told you many times, you're my go-to option. And you're my go-to option for this very, very dreary podcast. Look, listen, people are freaking out that Giannis watch is dead. All right? Because the Milwaukee Bucks went out and traded Eric Bledsoe, George Hill, three future first-round picks, and two pick swaps for Jrue Holiday, who is making $26 million next year with an early termination option of $27 million for the 21-22 season. So he's really just guaranteed for 1 year. And then shortly thereafter, the Bucks went out and got Bogdan Bogdanovic, man, by swapping Dante DiVincenzo, Ersan Ilyasova, and some other random stuff in a sign-and-trade. Bogdanovic is going to make $14 million a year. This is prompting a lot of panic because people think this means that Giannis is going to, sign the Supermax, because why would the Bucks do this without the Supermax? Let's start there. What does this say about Giannis's intentions on the Supermax? Because I can kind of see it going one way or the other, to be honest.
Yeah, it can definitely go both ways. I think I lean towards thinking that Giannis believes he can sign the Supermax. And so that's convinced the Bucks that, okay, it's fine to give up all these picks and sacrifice the future if we're going to have you around. But I think Giannis also says, hey, I'll sign the Supermax because that maximizes my financial well-being. But the way player power is now, if things aren't going well, I'm just going to want out.
Yeah. And again, I think you're probably mentioning that because, over in the West, James Harden, with 3 years left on his deal? With
2 years.
2 years?
So okay. The third year is a player option. So,
I mean, the player option is for like $47 million. So,
I mean, he said no to 50.
So. Yo, by the way, we'll talk about that too. But I just can't believe that he automatically turned down two more years tacked onto his contract at,
yeah,
like $50 million per year, because like at that point, it's not a guarantee that he's going to make that $50 million. Like, it's not a guarantee. He's 31 years old. That's, you're telling me it's like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's just that desperate and he doesn't really care about money. Maybe, honestly, you get to a certain point in life where you're just like, the additional money doesn't matter, which is another concern. But let's get back.
I wonder.
What did you say?
Just to quickly touch on that. I wonder how much of it is also factoring what the escrow is. Like, there's uncertainty with the escrow, right? So right now, obviously, guys who are supposed to make 40 mil are making 80% of that or whatever it may be, right? And so I wonder how much of that is a factor with looking at extensions now, saying, hey, I want some certainty before I really commit.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think it maybe is also a bit of a mistake. I mean, it depends on how they feel about the upcoming CBA too. If the next CBA completely locks down and it's way more in favor of the owners than the players, then yeah, I could see some logic in that. And again, that's partially why that I thought it was wild that Harden turned down an additional $50 million a year at the age of like 35 and 36. Like, I mean, all right.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a tough one for sure. But I mean, I guess from his perspective, he's looking at it probably thinking, this is the level I've been at. I've been super durable my whole career. And so why not? And his game sort of lends to being able to have that added longevity, right? Because of his ability to shoot the ball or create his own shot. So maybe he sees himself going till he's like 38, 39, 40, whatever it is, right?
I mean, I guess so, but yeah, it's a lot. And look, we'll get to Harden in a sec too, but let's get back to Giannis. People are freaking out because what this might say about the Supermax. I mean, I think on one hand, you could say that the Bucks don't make a move this drastic and they don't push all in without a guarantee from their superstar that he's going to sign the Supermax. But then on the other flip side, you can also say that because Giannis has not signed the Supermax, you need to do whatever you can to persuade him mm-hmm. to sign. And so therefore you make these moves and mortgage your future. To me, obviously Giannis and the Bucks have been in communication. They sat down after the season, they discussed it. Then Giannis went vacationing in Greece and all over the Mediterranean. It looked great. All right. He's celebrating with his newborn son. But you know, if I'm Giannis too, and I'm looking at the situation. So first off, the Bucks have, this is their whole roster at the moment. Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Brook Lopez, someone, Jay James, okay, and Thanasis. So that's seven players. That's, what, eight players right now? You need seven more players. They're already pretty much at the cap. So those guys are going to be minimum guys. You know, and then you're looking at that roster. A lot of those guys, the core guys, are older. You know, Middleton close to 30, Lopez above 30, Holiday above 30, Bogdanovic, you know, even though he's been in the league very short amount of time, he's 28 already. Giannis is, I believe, the youngest guy on the roster now, at least the youngest guy in the rotation. And then you also have taken out pretty much all your ability to make other moves because you've taken out all your matching salary with Eric Bledsoe and George Hill. You've given up all your picks and pick swaps. So, and you have no more prospects left on the roster, really. So, I don't know, man. I mean, I could see it going either way. I mean, if you had to make a prediction right now, do you think Giannis signs the Supermax? If you were Giannis right now, would you sign the Supermax?
If I were Giannis, I would definitely would not sign the Supermax. Mm. I just don't look at Milwaukee as an organization that's seriously committed to winning on that level, right? Like, you had the time to prove it. If I'm Giannis, I don't like the coach either, right? And so for those reasons, I wouldn't. But with Giannis, I can see him saying, okay, let me secure the bag now. And then when the situation isn't what I want, or they're not, you know, giving me the right pieces, then I'm just going to say, hey, get me out of here.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. So Giannis could sign the Supermax right now, but he could also wait to the end of the year and get that exact same Supermax. You know, what is specifically the incentive? I mean, if you're Giannis too, you can also think about it in terms of, you know, like I'm sure he wants to secure long-term security for his family. There's actually Andrew Marchionowski did a really nice three-episode series on the Giannis draft, sort of coming, you know, just the Giannis story, sort of how he grew up, his agent, teams who were after him, stuff like that. I listened through it. Masai was not mentioned, which is, you know, okay, all right. Maybe he just didn't want to be mentioned, or maybe he just wasn't involved, whatever. But nevertheless, you know, if you're Giannis, you might be looking to secure long term. But again, like, he's what, 24, 25 years old? Like, you can secure yourself regardless of what's going on. For me, I wouldn't tie myself to a five-year deal if I were Giannis at this point, you know?
I agree.
You know,
but I mean, he even, like, you bring up the podcast that he did with Woj. Like, one thing that really stands out in that podcast, and when you listen to Giannis in general, like, he's so big on loyalty. He's so big on sort of that one player, one team concept. And you've heard him talk as well about, like, how much Kobe inspires him. So I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of plays on the back of his mind as well, of being sort of that one team guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look, I think this definitely improves Milwaukee for next season. I think the question is, how much does it improve Milwaukee, and how good are the Bucks right now? I would say after their playoff run this year, and I guess last year as well, their issues were that, it didn't feel like they had a great defender for the wing. If you recall from the Raptors-Bucks series, it was a lot of Malcolm Brogdon guarding Kawhi, which, yeah, Malcolm Brogdon's a decent defender, but, I mean, that should not be a matchup. and Chris Middleton was not used for that matchup. And then this year, they famously struggled with Jimmy Butler. So even though they are a really good defensive team and they have consistently delivered great defensive metrics, there's something about that defense in the playoffs with that style of coaching that has not been as successful in the playoffs. It's still good, for sure. It's still good, but it's not as successful. I thought Brook Lopez got exposed both in the Bucks against the Raptors series and also Bucks Heat series in terms of dropping back and being unable to protect the perimeter. And then you look at, obviously, the crunch time offense, right? I mean, you know, it was a real, real issue for the Bucks. You know, they conceded 26-3 run to the Raptors. You know, against the Heat, it's similar kind of deal. Some of those games are close, but still, you know, I would say I felt way more confident in Miami with Jimmy Butler than I did with the Bucks, with the way they had it with Giannis and, you know, other guys. So does this address either of those two issues?
No, it doesn't. Because again, look at everything you've said. The biggest issue is coaching. Even you go back to that most recent series that the Bucks had against the Heat. Yeah, overall, their perimeter defense was weak. And you can point to the flaws of Brook Lopez. But even the stuff that they had working for them, like Wesley Matthews was their best defender against Jimmy Butler.
Yep. Yep.
And Bud wouldn't use him. And so it's like, what are you doing? And so we see this over and over again. Even now with these pieces, what's Jrue Holiday's minutes going to be at in the playoffs? Is it going to be 28? Is it going to be 26? What's Giannis going to be at in the playoffs? So these are the things that still need to be addressed that we don't know are going to change. And then you talk about winning the championship. I think as a defense, even as an offense, essentially your team has to operate like a Swiss Army knife. You have to be able to operate in different ways and do multiple things. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that versatility, then you are going to get caught out at some point. You think about the Raptors championship. They had to play against Philly a certain way. They had to play against the Bucks a certain way. Then they had to play against the Warriors a different way. And they were able to do that because of all the different schemes they have defensively, because of the variety and attack that they had offensively. You look at the Lakers as well, winning this championship. Yeah, we can talk LeBron and AD, but again, they had to play a different style against Portland, a different style, that micro ball style against Houston. Denver plays very differently. And then you look at Miami playing very differently as well. So you have to be able to adjust to different teams. And with Bud, I don't have the confidence that they can do that.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely one of the biggest question marks now, because you do have an influx of, I would say, higher end talent. They definitely traded a lot of their depth for higher end talent, but I mean most teams would make that trade for sure. And it is really a matter of coaching, as you mentioned, because you are going to need some flexibility. I feel like if they had one more wing, like a really good wing, they could put Giannis at center and they can go small ball, and that could really tear teams up, right? Because if you have, you know, Bogdan at one, you have Jrue Holiday at two, Chris Middleton at three, this filler, you know, let's say like an OG and an OB type at four, and then Giannis, you know, that's unbelievable. But they don't really quite have that flexibility at the moment based on the roster. And again, the roster is seven guys right now. So it's a real concern. I mean, I saw some jokes about how, you know, Giannis made these moves so that Bud will keep him in the game, because they literally have no bench right now. But I also just think that, like, it's, I don't know, man. I mean, it's weird because in terms of strictly as a basketball trade, just in terms of like, what do they get, what are they receiving, and what do they give out? It's not a great trade in terms of value wise, but again, it doesn't even really, it's not about that. It's the same situation as the Paul George thing is with, you know, yes, no one in their right mind is going to trade, you know, five picks, two pick swaps and Shea and Gallinari just for Paul George. But if that means you're getting two guys to secure themselves to a franchise, then maybe, yeah, you do that move and the calculus is a little different. It's kind of the same thing here with Giannis. At least that's the justification for it. But I don't know, man. I guess my question is, like, do you feel like superstars are a little bit too powerful now? Because, like, that doesn't really seem like, first of all, I don't think this current roster as it is with the Bucks is a championship team. Like, I still don't really believe that. And that's not me being salty because, you know, whatever, Giannis might not come to Toronto. That's literally a pipe dream. I'm just mean that, like, as a basketball team, the way it's constructed, it doesn't really strike me as a championship team. And it feels like superstars, because they're so valuable, they're so important, they're so marketable, they're such a big thing that it feels like teams are just catering to whatever you need to do to satisfy that superstar. And that, I don't know if that is good for winning or if that's good for being a GM. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Are superstars too powerful is my question.
I think it's a fair question. I don't think they're too powerful. Just because when you look at NBA players in the league as a whole, franchises have so much control when they come in. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally the first 7 years of their career, they don't really have a choice. Kristaps Porzingis, that's like the first example we've had in recent times where someone's still on his rookie deal and saying, no, get me the hell out of here, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think when players start demanding where they want to be or they feel like they're in a bad situation, I think they're perfectly within their rights to do so, right? When they've given it time and things haven't worked out. But I think let's look at James Harden, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a situation where it's been 50-50. Like, oh, yeah. James Harden has, they catered to him in every way possible.
Bro, the whole...
They said, hey,
The Rockets weren't
we're going to have the offense around you.
Yeah. The Rockets...
No, go ahead.
Yo, the Rockets were not about winning a championship. The Rockets' whole purpose was winning James Harden MVP as a franchise. That's it.
Yeah, and they built the whole culture around him, right? And so now when you say, okay, I couldn't have the best of both worlds, some of that's got to be on you too. It's when you made yourself so important in terms of your individual goals, you have to realize there's a bit of a sacrifice there. And maybe, if you weren't chasing MVP so hard, you would have had more in the tank in the playoffs and, your performance wouldn't have gone down as much and you might have won a series and you might have got to the finals. Now, the Rockets did accomplish a lot. I don't want to diminish what they accomplished. They went against a dynastic team in the Warriors, pushed them to 7 games. And frankly, they were Chris Paul injury away from getting to the finals. So that's significant. At the same time, the Harden situation, that's, I think as an organization, that's a tough pill to swallow. But there's other situations where you look at when LeBron was in Cleveland the first time, obviously they didn't put the pieces around him, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, what was the best player he played with? Sasha Pavlovich?
Oh, come on, man.
Ilgauskas?
Like Anthony Parker, baby.
Boobie Gibson? So you look at Chris Bosh in Toronto, uh-huh. Right? Obviously, he didn't put pieces around him. Best player he played with was Hedo Turkoglu or TJ Ford. So situations like that, I empathize with the player mm-hmm. where you have to take control of that. And but with Harden, I find it hard to empathize because I think he's gotten everything he could have possibly hoped for. Everything that he wanted when he left OKC, he got from Houston.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't really feel bad for Houston necessarily. And I'm really not against player empowerment or anything like that. I'm just thinking that, like, is it a smart move to give players that much control over your decision-making process? Because you look at some of the recent trades, right? Anthony Davis trade. They're giving up Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, 3 first-round picks. All right, whatever. First-round picks for the Lakers, they're probably going to be good the next couple of years. Maybe not that much, but still a huge haul. The Paul George's trade, 5 firsts, 2 swaps, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. The Westbrook trade, 2 firsts, 2 swaps. I mean, that was just a bad trade all around. And again, I don't know how Daryl Morey escapes all of the criticism for that. It's like, oh, yeah, Fertitta wanted to push that deal through. It's like, that's fine. You still have to make a deal, man. Make a better deal than that. And the Drew Holiday trade, 3 picks, 2 swaps, and then all the rest of your salary, whatever. I'm just thinking that, like, a lot of these moves don't really feel like they're going to lead to championships. The AD thing is different. You already have LeBron, I'm totally happy giving LeBron the power to make moves. You have LeBron, okay? I think the issue is most mm-hmm. of these like superstars are not LeBron. Most of these superstars are not LeBron. So, that's, because like you think about it, like, oh, yeah, you're going to acquiesce to every single, whim of James Harden. Okay, I get it. Yeah, you want to build a team. James Harden is not like a bankable, you have him, you are in championship contention superstar. You are probably guaranteed 50 wins, and you're probably going to compete, and he's going to have a lot of numbers. but you are not guaranteed to compete for a championship. And unless you really have that in mind, like, what is the goal? Like, it's all about satisfying a superstar rather than trying to win. And of course, most of those things are like hand in hand. You have to satisfy, you have to A, have a superstar, A, B, have him be bought in, and C, have a great roster around him. And then, you know, D, you need some luck and things like that and health. But that's how you win a championship. And I feel like for a lot of these teams, they're just skipping through all of it. It's you know, it's just our superstar's unhappy. We got to do whatever we can to satisfy this guy. And it's just like, I don't know if that's necessarily the way to operate, or I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, whether the Bucks win a championship or not, I could really care less. But I just feel like the trend doesn't really feel, I don't know, it doesn't really feel the most towards winning. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that like teams should have complete control over players, and that you know, players should just get dumped whenever, and that players can't have any recourse to take against the against teams. But when you essentially make players GMs, there is no actual recourse for the player. There are recourses for GMs. If you are a bad GM and you run a team, you get fired. You can't fire a superstar. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that, like, again, I'm a lot, you know, it's a bad move necessarily to try to appease, you know, Giannis, or it's a bad move to appease Kawhi, or it's a bad move to appease all these other guys. But it's got to be a very select handful of players that even get that power. And like for James to have it right now, it's kind of trash, right? Like, he's basically telling Houston, I only want to go here. I have 3 years left of my contract. You're going to trade me there, and you're going to take on less. Like, you're not going to get the best deal for it. I mean, like, that's objectively.
Yeah, that's why I think
it's a shitty situation.
With the money, with the time that's left on his contract, and the amount of the contract they gave him, I think Houston's perfectly within there to say, hey, we're not getting what we want. Mm-hmm. You can either give us more options where we can get what we want from other teams, or you can just continue to play basketball here. We're not obligated to trade you. Mm-hmm. And you can just kind of deal with it. And again, they can point to the fact that you wanted Chris Paul, we brought you Chris Paul. You wanted Russell Westbrook, we brought you Russell Westbrook. So I think situations like that, it's on both parties to figure it out. And I think the important thing you're highlighting too is, we talk a lot about chemistry and, you know, building that cohesion. And you look at what the Raptors have. Mm-hmm. And big part of why I want Fred VanVleet back, even if it is a little overpriced, is because there is that intangible value in having been through the battle together and having gone through the struggles together. And you look at Siakam and Fred and what they've gone through in their come up, you know, to the 905, through the 905, then the bench up now, being basically cornerstones of the franchise, there's intangible value in that. And I think players also need to recognize that in terms of, hey, okay, every franchise sort of needs to be on the clock because you need to keep them on their toes in terms of pursuing winning. Yeah. But also, you know, be straight up with them. Don't, you know, don't just all, you know, keep your thoughts to yourself and then all of a sudden one day just up and be like, okay, I want to trade out of here, right? If you're consistently communicating, saying, I'm happy now, I'm happy now, I'm happy now, and all of a sudden you ask for a trade, that doesn't make sense, right? Be consistent in how you're approaching those front offices, saying, hey, this is the window we have. These are the things I want us to accomplish as a team. And I think a great example, I know Kawhi's taken a big hit with the way the bubble went down, but, you know, reading Nick Nurse's book, when Nick Nurse says he has a meeting with Kawhi and Nick is the one going to him saying, hey, I'm looking at the level you're playing. I think you have a real shot at MVP. What are the things that you want from me to help you do that? And Kawhi straight up just tells him, I don't care about any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just want to win championships. Like that should be the approach. Mm-hmm. You can't blame people for wanting those individual accolades because obviously they mean a lot. But at the same time, if you want those things, then you have to recognize that you might not get everything else that comes, you know, the team stuff that can come with it.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, for a guy like on Kawhi's level with that mentality, okay, maybe the only thing holding Kawhi back is health. But like, you know, you're willing to acquiesce to these kind of guys. But, you know, I think the other thing is when you have a team-based sport like basketball is, you know, it's when players essentially become GMs, how does that work in a locker room? Again, if you're LeBron, LeBron is the exception, okay? Like, it's not like everyone should be modeling himself as LeBron. That doesn't really work. But if you're in the Brooklyn Nets locker room, for example, you played together. You didn't really achieve that much. But, you know, it was a decent team. You made the playoffs, whatever. The whole core is gone, essentially. Everyone else who is still there is up for sale. And it's not even your GM that's making that move. It's really just Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who just came, haven't actually done shit with the squad yet. Of course, they are champions and they're accomplished players. I'm not saying they haven't done shit. I'm just mean with that specific situation.
Yeah.
And they are now in positions to trade these guys. And if they're not, then you just
got the coach fired.
They got the coach fired. Well, all this other stuff. All right. You're just there. And again, how does that impact on a team sport? How do you compartmentalize that? Right. Like if we're all working together in an office and we're coworkers, but I also decide what you're doing. And also there's a boss that's supposed to decide what everyone else is doing. That's really awkward, man.
Be careful, Will. Be careful where you go with this, Will.
You know, to be clear, this is just the hypothetical, but I'm just saying, in a team sport, it's kind of awkward, man. I mean, but look, this is the world we live in. You know, this is superstars. They make their moves. You know, and I think, look, we'll get back to the Raptors, I think, in a second. But I think the last, like, bigger ethereal question I wanted to ask you was sort of like, maybe, because a friend of mine brought this up to me. It was like, maybe draft picks aren't really worth what we think they're worth. Do you feel like it's like teams are now correctly assessing that, yeah, I'm giving up 5 draft picks. That's fine. You know what I mean? It's worth it for a superstar. Or do you feel like teams are just really desperate and they are suddenly undervaluing draft picks? Because the way it's going right now, every trade has like 4 draft picks in it. And maybe 4 draft picks isn't what we used to think of it as, right? Obviously, the Billy King trade with the Brooklyn Nets, taking on Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce just to block Kyle Lowry in Game 7. You know, that sort of scarred the league maybe for a while, but it's like every single week now there is a Billy King trade being made. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, draft picks are basically like cars, right? As soon as you drive it off the lot, it doesn't have the same value. So if you get rid of them, you know, before there's a name attached to it, that's when they have their highest value. After that, you look at, you know, players that struggle. Obviously, there's the exceptions who then, you know, you're not even thinking about trading, right? Then you're just holding on to that incredible value that you have. But I think the way GMs look at draft picks, that value that they hold before you make a selection, I think that's immense. So if you can get a star, and again, you know, you're seeing more of these win now moves. Masai basically broke the league, right? He went out, went all in, and now everyone thinks they can do it. So I think, you know, but to your point, people are confusing what an acceptable sort of package is for a superstar, right? Like, it's one thing to give up the package the Lakers gave up for AD.
Mm-hmm.
But now when you're giving up the AD package for a Paul George, when you're giving up the AD package for a Jrue Holiday, that's when you're wondering what's going on here. That's when things don't match up. It's one thing to give it up for that elite top tier talent, right? Mm-hmm. Even if the Bucks gave up that elite package for Chris Paul, you're looking at it differently. With Jrue Holiday, again, arguably the best defensive guard in the league, but offensively, is he going to be able to address some of those weaknesses that the Bucks have when teams again will build that wall and force the ball out of Giannis's hands? What's the play going to be?
Well, that's the thing. You're not playing the Bucks any differently, and you are playing them kind of the same way you were before. Now, of course, before it was easier with Bledsoe, who was not shooting well. But let me just give you Jrue Holiday's shooting numbers from 3 of the last 5 seasons. Okay, this is dating back to 2015. 34% from 3 on 4.7 attempts per game. All right, now of course, yeah, he had to generate more of his own threes, whatever, you know, maybe his catch and shoot numbers are better. Everyone's catch and shoot numbers are better, man. But yeah, it's not like they acquired Dame Lillard here. But again, like I do think it improves the Bucks, at least in the bottom line. I still do think that, like, again, you know, the Bucks are going to be played kind of the same way. And, you know, We'll see. I mean, you know what? Part of this is also how good is Giannis, right? Because I think they also need Giannis to deliver on the next stage. Because part of the Bucks' shortcomings has been what Giannis has done. Yes, Bud could have played him more minutes. Yes, Bud could have put him on Jimmy Butler or whatever, maybe put more defense. But at the same time, it's also some of the limitations is his own game. And that's where you get into a tricky thing because superstars, yeah, you know, you can make all the calls, you make all the shots, you trade everybody in your team, you're the boss of your franchise. And then what happens? If you don't deliver, there should be some accountability, right? Like there should be some accountability for Kawhi for the way the Clippers thing was handled. Mm-hmm. And I think the tougher thing is just it's so difficult now to build anything close to a dynasty, right? Because you would need a lot of things to organically come together to form a dynasty. You don't necessarily make these superstar trades and then get a dynasty, because what superstars are doing immediately when they become unhappy is drain the entire team of all the assets that they have acquired over a period of time. And the only way the teams can recoup any of these assets is to trade one of the superstars and make the superstars unhappy again. It's just a weird cycle. You know what I mean? But it's in order to get something like Golden State, teams always want to build a Golden State, a San Antonio Spurs, you know what I mean? And for those situations, you have careful management, you have good management, you treat the players fair, you pick the right players, and then you build the right talent around them, and then those guys are happy. And they can be happy for a long time, and they can be happy because they've actually got enough star players to surround themselves with. But, yeah, man, the league is changing, man. The league is very different now, so. Last thing I want to ask you, man, Raptors, how does this affect the Raptors? Does this change their strategy at all? I think, one, the East looks pretty damn good right now, man. I mean, especially if James Harden makes his way to the Brooklyn Nets, that would be pretty killer. And if Giannis does end up signing the Supermax and essentially take him out of free agency in 2021, how does this affect how the Raptors have approached free agency this year, the offseason this year? I don't know. What changes right now?
Look, I think for the Raptors, the current free agents become even more of a priority because I think one, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And so you maybe take a step back and say, we'll take care of 2021 when 2021 comes. But right now we have these assets that we can maintain and keep in Toronto. I think that has to be the priority, re-signing Fred, re-signing Serge, and then you go from there. Because at the end of the day, you know, even if you pay a bit of a premium on Fred, if you pay a bit of a premium on Serge, you have to remember that Masai's greatest strength as president GM is asset management. Mm. And even if it gets to a point where you feel the need to move on, he has proven that he can get value, right? We saw that with DeMar DeRozan. We saw that Terrence Ross, we saw that with Andrea Bargnani. He can turn contracts into valuable assets. And so I think for me, you don't risk losing those guys for nothing. If you bring them back, I trust Masai. You know, first of all, they're good players. They're going to contribute in positive fashion to your team. Mm-hmm. But if you ever get to a point where you feel the need to move on, I trust Masai to be able to get more than fair value for them.
Yeah, I agree. I've always been kind of in agreement with the keep the asset kind of thing, especially now you look at it, right? Like, okay, you might say, oh man, all these teams are interested in Serge, right? You know, this team's interested, this team's interested. And then, yeah, maybe if you're the Raptors, I'm like, yeah, I will pay a little bit more to keep Serge and we'll see how the season goes. And we'll see what happens at the trade deadline because you're still going to be needing Serge because you didn't sign Serge. Yep. And Raptors going to have the player. That's the thing. When people talk about like, after over 20 million is overpay for Fred, I would walk away at 22. He's only worth 18. And it's like, essentially you're paying the player's salary and then you have an additional payment of what they are worth as to your franchise as a trade asset as well.
Exactly.
And it's more valuable. I mean, obviously if Fred was getting paid the max, let's say he was getting paid 30 mil or something. Yeah, okay, then no, that's no longer an asset. Then you get into the Tobias Harris situation. Just because you have the player doesn't mean no one wants them, right? But even if you overpay by just a little bit or even you know a fair amount, you still have a player to trade. You look at Gordon Hayward right now. Yeah, I mean, it would not say Gordon Hayward has provided the Celtics with maximum value for the max contract he signed. Obviously, he broke his foot, whatever, but still, even since. But he's still being discussed right now as a trade you know, asset. You know what I mean? And you need these contracts. Eric Bledsoe, you know what? He turned out to be a bit of a trade asset here because you're able to match him with salary. George Hill signed an expensive deal. You can kind of use that as well. So keep the assets, keep the players. And honestly, I think no matter what happens with the Raptors, okay, the Giannis thing is a pipe dream. All right. It's fun to talk about for sure. And it's definitely fun to slander the Bucks, but it's a pipe dream. And anyone who kind of thought that it was some sort of certainty, you're kidding yourself, right? But at the same time, I think for no matter what the Raptors do, whether they want to keep their salary or their books open for 2021, what they want to do, we know that free agency is a more difficult path for the Raptors. Historically, has been a more difficult path for the Raptors to build through free agency than through drafting, than through trades. The Raptors have been way more successful drafting and trading. So, you know, that's one perspective. And then two, you have to think about what is your goal? Is your goal to win a championship? How did the Raptors win their first championship? Well, they had sucked for many years. They had a lot of players and picks and stuff like that. That, you know, it's not necessarily like a process kind of, you know, Sam Hinkie or like now with Sam Presti holding like 16 extra picks so he could finally hit one. You know, it's not like that kind of situation, but you still had a guy like JV who was a lottery pick and who was valuable enough and good enough to eventually become traded for Marc Gasol. You had a guy like Terrence Ross, another lottery pick, not great as a player necessarily, but good enough to trade him for Serge Ibaka. You had DeMar DeRozan, who was a lottery pick. You developed him, and all of a sudden, Kawhi becomes available. You know, a unique situation, but still, you flipped him for value, you know, Jakob Poeltl. And what the process of winning this championship has, you know, taken away so many of what the Raptors had in terms of draft capital that became actual players. So I think if the Raptors do kind of be patient at this time, it's also not necessarily saying, oh, they're going to tank, but it's just sort of like we need to recoup and get some more assets because the bench used to be Pascal, you know, Norm, Fred, DeLon, Jakob Poeltl. And now the bench is like Stanley Johnson and Pat McCaw and all these other guys who were like, weren't actually part of the draft capital, right? So you might need some time to restock that.
Listen, the only type of players that Masai has completely just walked away from are Patrick Patterson and Lou Williams.
Mm.
Does Fred seem like that type of player? Does Serge seem like that type of player? So I think we have a pretty good idea based on Masai's history of what he's at least going to try and do here, even if it doesn't play out that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, man, look, free agency is busy. I'm pretty much going to be doing almost daily pods, you know, because there's just so much going on. Again, we're packing so much into it. We didn't even talk about the fact that the NBA just put out some guidelines about like, oh, you know, players got to come back to camp at this specific time. And I'm also thinking like, what is today's date? The 17th. So if there's a 14-day quarantine and the Raptors going to play in Canada, the players already got to be in Toronto by now. Free agency hasn't even started. The draft hasn't even started. It's not even physically possible for some of these guys to be here. So I don't even know. So a lot to be determined. But
We don't even know where they're going to play. So
we still don't know where they're going to play. By the way, that's going to be an awkward sell for free agency, right? Like you're walking in. You're like, all right, sign this deal with us. And they're like, cool. Where am I going to live? And they're like, maybe Nashville. Like you can't. Come on, man. You got to make a decision soon. So I'm sure as more news comes, I'll be calling you back on this the Zoom call, but
I'll be ready.
Big V, baby. Anything to plug? You excited for this draft?
Excited for the draft, baby. I've been watching Robo's videos and catching up.
Yeah, look, listen, man. The 10-minute highlight video that guys like Robo and other guys can make, those are so useful because there is no way I'm going to track down like three games worth of tape and watch that. There's so little return. So looking forward to the draft, man. You got a prediction? Give me your quick prediction on who the Raptors is going to draft.
Man, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's going to go higher than 29, but I'm rooting for Théo Maledon.
Oh my goodness. The Frenchman.
I think he's sort of one of those solid picks that has a high floor, which the Raptors tend to like.
Yep.
And they'll just build up from there. I think because of his EuroLeague experience. And I think, honestly, I feel like that's another thing that has changed over the last few years is just the way franchises look at now having EuroLeague experience. Remember, there was always that stigma of European players being soft, European players not being ready, this and that. And now I think that's flipped, where you're looking at EuroLeague experience the right way. And so I think for him to be really young and have that EuroLeague experience and be more of that floor general type, I think he'd be a nice pickup for the Raptors. But I have an inkling he'll probably go higher than that. You have a prediction?
No, not really. I mean, I think it's kind of silly to make a prediction, but even though I just made you do it.
It's what we do, man.
No, I mean, you know, I have a running spreadsheet of sort of all the players the Raptors have spoken to and reported and stuff like that. So I'm going to touch on that in the second half of this podcast. But yeah, I mean, if I'm looking at the sort of the prospects pool and everything like that that's out there, I just want a guy who can shoot first and foremost. And I don't know if Théo Maledon has the 3-point shot necessarily down just yet. So, I mean, I think honestly, there's a lot of good shooters in this draft, at least at the collegiate level. And that's probably where I would go. I mean, like, if they go with like a Malachi Flynn, who they've talked to, if they go with like a Desmond Bane, all these guys, like, there's a lot of guys that can shoot in this draft. So
shout out Aaron Rose, man. You go to his Twitter timeline, you know every single person the Raptors have spoken to.
Yeah, exactly. Aaron Rose must be the only media member with a BlackBerry, because how is he getting all these Messiah scoops? But no, yeah, I mean, look, the draft's coming up. It feels very secondary because so much is happening out there, but you know, hopefully it's all good. So Giannis, listen, don't sign in yet, just yet. Okay. Got to give the Raptors a chance. They might sign Théo Maledon, and you know, it's you know, that he could just be the French Jrue Holiday. So thanks for coming on the pod.
Of course.
And yeah, listeners, I'll be touching on the draft in a second.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. The Raptors have the NBA draft coming up on Wednesday. I'm definitely not going to pretend to be a draft expert, but I did my best here. So what I've done is go through all the players that the Raptors have been publicly linked to. So there have been a lot of reports of like player A talk to player or team B and stuff like that. So I kind of kept a running file of all these players that the Raptors have been linked to, and I can kind of go through the list. The Raptors obviously have the 29th pick. They have the 59th pick. They have the option to probably buy a second round pick. Obviously, we know what the Raptors' success in the undrafted player pool, you know, with guys like, Fred, you know, TD last year. You know, I guess even Matt Thomas is undrafted, Chris Boucher undrafted. Clearly, they're going to go into the undrafted pool, you know, O'Shea Brissett they added, things like that. So, you know, the Raptors are not shy about going that route. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a good, you know, draft. I think even though the Raptors are picking low, there's extensive history that Masai has in terms of success with lower picks. If you look at sort of his tenure in Denver, he did pretty well late in the draft, getting guys at pretty good value. Like, you know, who did he get? Kenneth Faried, which was a pretty good pick for a while. Faried kind of flamed out quick in his career, but he was quite good for Denver. And you know, you look at Evan Fournier was a pretty good pick. Again, for guys picking in the late 20s, which is what Fournier the guy went for, Faried went for, like, that's pretty damn good. So, you know, and of course, with the Raptors, it's gotten even better. You have DeLon at 20, Norman Powell 46, Pascal 27, you know, OG 23, you know, and of course some pretty good undrafted guys as well. So, it's a good history there, and I'm pretty excited about the draft. And like I mentioned in the first half of the episode, I really do believe that the Raptors are going to need a lot of success with these draft picks to build up their capital in terms of either A, building players who can become part of your core, or B, using some of this established young talent to then trade for other superstars that, you know, may come up in the future. I think that's probably the Raptors' best path to contention. I don't know if free agency is necessarily the most bankable path for the Raptors, who I have to remind people that the Raptors' best free agent signing are the most expensive, and I guess by definition their biggest free agent signing is either Damari Carroll or Hito Turkoglu. So, you know, obviously that was under a different general manager, at least with Hito. Damari was under Masai, so, you know, you just got to keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. Cap space, not necessarily always the biggest path for contention for the Raptors. But anyway, let's go through some of the players so the Raptors have been linked to. So the first one is Tyler Bay. The Raptors have apparently seen him in person. He is a 6'7", you know, power forward from Colorado with a 7'1 wingspan, so that's good. Wingspan is a very big deal. I actually went through and recently did a piece on this where I kind of looked at Masai's draft history and sort of the type of players he's had. One commonality that has held true throughout his picks was that he really values wingspan, the average differential between height and wingspan. And if you don't know, the average person has roughly the same height as my wingspan. So I'm 6'2", my wingspan is probably 6'2". You know, for NBA players, there is a noted difference. NBA players tend to have ridiculously long wingspans. Even though they are ridiculously tall, they are even longer than they are taller. So for Masai's picks, there's actually been an average differential in terms of wingspan over height of plus 4.5. So, you know, to put that into perspective, that's pretty much like OG Anunoby, for example. He's 6'8", but his wingspan is 7'2". I guess that's plus 6. You know, Terrence Davis, for example, 6'4", his wingspan is 6'8". So, you know, that's kind of what to look for. So, Tyler Bay, 6'7", power forward from Colorado, 7'1" wingspan. Say he runs the floor really hard. He's a pretty powerful finisher. I mean, you know, there's some defensively versatile tools in there. You know, he's got good leaping ability. He can contest shots. He's mobile. To me, I would say, honestly, you know, it's harder with bigs because they never look as sexy as maybe a guard does, because a guard's game just naturally lends itself to more skill, and a big, especially earlier in their careers, are usually doing more rudimentary things. I think Tyler has some real skills. You know, I would say he's a little undersized to play the four, though, and he's not really that skilled offensively, so he's kind of an in-between kind of guy. If you do want a undersized four, you at least need to shoot the three pretty proficiently. You obviously need to defend really well, and he has some of the physical tools, but yeah, I don't know. It was not the sexiest name on the list. Moving on, the Raptors have been linked to Devon Dotson, who is a 6'2 point guard from Kansas. You know, 6'2 point guard, 6'3 wingspan, so definitely not huge. You know, I would say, yeah, you know, it's funny because as I was doing the story about Masai's draft history and stuff like that, I was looking at the guards that he's picked. And the guards that he's picked essentially have, there's a hard and fast rule. He pretty much only drafts guards that have a great height. So on average, Masai's guards that he has drafted has been about 6'4". And if you take Fred out of the list, which, you know, Fred is technically undrafted, that bumps up to 6'5" in terms of average height for a guard that Masai has drafted. The average wingspan has been about 6'8" for, again, the guards that Masai has drafted in Denver and in Toronto. So to give you a perspective of what that guy looks like, essentially a DeLon Wright, essentially a Norman Powell, that kind of frame and figure. And so, you know, again, the only exception is Fred, and he was undrafted. So, you know, I would be, I don't know if that necessarily rules out guys like Dotson, but, you know, it could. But I would say Dotson, very quick off the bounce, definitely willing to attack the rim. Clever finisher. You know, he's small. He's, you know, finished pretty efficiently at the rim at the college level, 55% last year from in close. diverse, you know, set of finishes. You know, just honestly, just a very skilled offensive player when you watch him. Knows how to run pick and roll. Has a decent pass in him. You know, he's probably more of a scoring guard than a passing guard, but can definitely do a bit of both. And the Raptors have, you know, pretty much always had combo guards this whole time. So he's interesting for sure. And, you know, he honestly, even defensively, like, he gets into it. He gets plays the passing lanes, knows how to play. He's just a smart player and definitely very quick off the bounce. But, you know, some concerns there. Doesn't really shoot the three that well. 31% from three. Obviously, you're going to need to shoot the three really well as a small guard. So, honestly, small guards are pretty difficult and they're facing an uphill battle as it is. You're not expecting someone perfect at 29, but I still kind of doubt the Raptors go this way with a smaller guard. Another smaller guard that the Raptors have been linked to is Malachi Flynn, who is a 6'1 point guard out of San Diego State. That's Kawhi's alma mater. So Malachi, similar deal with Dotson. You know, 6'1 height, 6'3 wingspan. So again, not a very big guy, but you know, pretty creative in the pick and roll. Like, you know, he's like definitely very good at running the pick and roll, knows how to find his bigs for passes, knows how to, you know, be patient, work the defense, create angles. He's good with his timing, with everything like that, you know, letting plays develop. He's definitely savvy enough to create in the pick and roll, I think, at the next level. His mid-range pull-up is quite good, and he does have a couple of tricks to get to the rim. So he's undersized, but he does shoot well. You know, he's played on the ball, so I'm not totally sure how he would do as a two guard. But honestly, you know, I think the Raptors have shown a pretty good ability to take players and sort of add skills to their list. Shooting off the catch, off the screens. It's not like the Raptors are running like elevator doors every single time or anything super complicated. You know, you rarely see like Richard Hamilton type of players where you're going to have two, you know, screens by bigs on the baseline and then him just choosing to run through all of them and trying to confusing people. You're not expecting that in the modern NBA. I don't really feel like it's a lot more someone penetrates and, you know, rotate the ball and swing until someone's open for three. And, you know, I think Flynn will probably be fine. I think he's a better shooter than Dotson. He's pretty competitive player as well, Malachi Flynn, you know, engaged in every play. And I mean that in terms of like some defenders are just kind of like, I can defend my man. I even understand what the help rotation is, but some guys aren't necessarily super engaged defensively where they find a way to be involved in every single play. And that's kind of the sense I get from Flynn, is that it's a little, you know, Fred-esque. You know, Fred will just be in, you know, the play, someone's running pick and roll on the other side of the floor, and all of a sudden Fred just pops up and he's, you know, putting his hand in around, you know, the free throw line area on a drive and disrupting the pass and or disrupting the dribble and creating a turnover and deflecting and stuff like that. Malachi gives you that kind of sense. You know, there's concerns there. It's like, you know, can he really finish at the next level? He's small. He's not that explosive, but, you know, it's not terrible. It's not terrible. I wouldn't mind. If between the two, I'd probably take Flynn over Dotson, but, you know, both guys are pretty skilled offensively. It's just really that they're small. That's it. And the Raptors have traditionally, or Masai has traditionally, not drafted small guards. Another small guard the Raptors have talked to is Tyrell Terry. So it seems like Terry's probably going to go before the Raptors pick a 29. Seems like people are really bullish on his shooting ability. But he's 6'2 with a 6'4 wingspan. So again, smaller than the Raptors usually take. Out of Stanford, shooting guard, elite shooter, like pull up, catch and shoot threes, hunts for it. Transition, you know, just one of those guys who, you know, a lot of people can shoot threes, but guys who can create opportunities and find opportunities and knows how to play the game. I would say Terry really fits that role. I mean, he's probably like a Landry Shamet, basically, because he's also really small, kind of like Shamet, like really slender, 160 pounds, not that explosive. He's not that big either, so I don't know. I would say there's limited upside here, but the Raptors apparently talked to him. I still think that he probably goes before the Raptors pick, but I also, you know, come on, how much do I really know about these draft players? I'm really doing my best here. You know, in terms of other guards that the Raptors have been linked to, Kareem Mane is one of them. I touched on it in the podcast with KD last week. I like him. I don't know if he necessarily goes in the first round. Probably a second-round guy. And if he doesn't go in the second round, I could definitely see the Raptors going after him as an undrafted player and selling him on the opportunity to stay home. Kareem is grew up in Montreal by way of Senegal, and yeah, man, this guy physically fits the frame of what the Raptors have looked for traditionally in point guards. 6'5 with a 7 feet wingspan, you know, in the first half of the podcast, Vivek talked about Théo Maledon. Like, he is also kind of similar in that front, like 6'5". He's got a smaller wingspan of 6'9", but that's still pretty big. Kareem Mane is, yeah, the wingspan is incredible. You know, definitely a pretty hard competitor. You know, I think the offensive skill set is still needs to round out, especially for a guard. But, yeah, I mean, I'd be pretty excited to take him, to be honest. I think just the physical tools is there. I think, you know, being Canadian is a nice little added bonus there as well. And, you know, physically he fits a lot more. But he is more raw, and you need to put a lot more development into him. I think the Raptors have not necessarily been shy about that in previous years. I mean, you could argue that Pascal was raw when he came in. OG was raw when he came in. You know, all these other guys, Norm, you know, and, you know, they become more skilled as they come into the program. But they had great physical tools, they had great ability, they had great willingness to compete. And I liked it about Kareem. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Maledon is another guy. Again, it's kind of similar profile. He played in France. Good passer as well. You know, some good trickery as well. You know, he's played a lot of professional basketball, so he really is more polished than the average player coming out of this. Like, you know, even if you played NCAA, that's probably not as detailed and as disciplined and as, you know, just advanced, I think, in terms of playing in EuroLeague and things like that. Maledon is crafty at driving to the rim. He has a little bit of a runner, has a, kind of like a little stop-start kind of shiftiness, which I always enjoy in the point guard. Especially if you are quick and you are big and you're able to get your shot off at odd angles, that could really help you basically be unguardable, or at least a lot more unpredictable. At the moment, I would say he's not really unguardable as a whole. I mean, he definitely needs a screen to score. Not very dominant one-on-one score by any means. But I think a lot of players coming out of Europe aren't really dominant one-on-one scorers. I just don't think it's like a skill that is as used there, because I think so much of the principles of European basketball, and of course, they're, you know, different leagues, different countries, different players, different backgrounds. Obviously, I'm generalizing, but one of the core, you know, signatures and hallmarks of an international game is that there's a lot less one-on-one. You don't see James Harden isolating 20 times a game in Barcelona or Real Madrid or, you know, wherever they're playing basketball, Olympiacos or, you know, all these other places. So, yeah, it's not surprising that he doesn't have a great one-on-one skill set. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's some drawbacks with Théo. I mean, apparently he doesn't really play defense that well. One comp I saw that I really liked was that he was kind of DeLon Wright-esque. Although I would say DeLon's pretty good at D, but kind of that kind of similar kind of player offensively, you know, with that skill, with that trickery, with that length, with that driving ability, pretty good passer as well. Yeah, you know, that kind of player. In terms of wings, so, you know, you got guys like Desmond Bane, who, again, I talked about last week on the pod with Katie, kind of like an Eric Gordon type, you know, old Eric Gordon, I would say, not the young Eric Gordon who can really drive to the rim, finish, attack, super athletic, you know, like really bouncy. I don't really feel like that's what Desmond Bane is, but he's competes really hard. He's really good at shooting. He stretches out to 30 feet. You know, solid playmaker as well, you know, committed on defense. His athleticism is below average, and he's got what is known as negative wingspan, which is that his wingspan is somehow shorter than his height, which is pretty normal for a lot of people. I might even have negative wingspan, but for an NBA player, I don't know, it's like a scarlet letter for some reason. But, yeah, it's weird. He also just like very strange player to watch, because he's like not jumping too much for shooting, because like, he barely lifts. But he just also, like, the net doesn't move. It's weird, man. Like, he's a really good shooter. And, again, if the Raptors can get a really good shooter out of the 29th pick, I'd be pretty happy with that. He's 6'6". He can play on the wing. Not, you know, I would not be upset with that one. Isaiah Joe is another player the Raptors have spoken to. Apparently, the Sixers they've already said they really want to draft him, which is cool, I guess. Just put your intentions out there. But, yeah, you know, I would say he's a great shooter. A little bit of a chucker, kind of like a Terrence Ross type. If he's going to be taken by the Sixers, then whatever. You know, that's what it is. Good length as well. And some good athleticism. Kind of skinny as well. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Terrence Ross. You know, who else the Raptors have spoken to? Josh Green. This came in recently. He's 6'6", shooting guard out of Arizona with a 6'10 wingspan. So fits the Raptors' physical profile there. say, a good shooter, a bit of a wide base as he shoots, you know, and the form is a little strange, although a lot of people have said the top of his form looks like Klay, which, you know, has to be a good thing if you're being compared to Klay as a shooter. You know, he can finish a little bit too. Runs the floor hard, you know, willing, engaged defender. I mean, I would say he's kind of like a 3-and-D kind of guy. I wouldn't say he's that offensively skilled to create off the dribble and things like that. Shooting off the dribble has been a challenge for him. When he gets to the rim, a little bit out of control sometimes. I feel like a lot of players in the league kind of fit that profile. You know, long, rangy, 3-and-D type. Can't create that much of his own offense, but can be a supporting piece within an offense. So, you know, Josh Green. There's Jaden McDaniels. The Raptors have worked out kind of similar to Josh Green. Kind of all-around kind of player. Maybe not as good of a shooter, but, you know, maybe a little bit more athletic. And then you get to the centers, you know, that the Raptors have spoken to. Xavier Tillman is someone that, you know, the Raptors have been linked to from the start. Apparently, the Raptors were one of the first teams to talk to him during the draft process. He fits a lot of what the Raptors do. So, you know, one other trend in Masai's drafting is that he's gone for seniors a lot. Now, not seniors, but like experienced players, juniors, seniors. You know, I would say sometimes even sophomores are considered experienced. But guys who have played, you know, multiple years, not just freshmen. He actually rarely drafts freshmen. I mean, really, Bruno was the freshman that he drafted, and yeah, you know, that did not work out. So, you know, I think on one hand, I think it is an inefficiency the Raptors can sort of tackle and use to their advantage. I think a lot of teams look at a guy like Xavier Tillman, who's 6'9", small ball 5, can shoot the 3 a little bit, has done really well in the 3-point shooting drills, you know, can defend. He was Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, has consistently proven to have skills that would translate to a winning style of play in the next level. But because he is a guy who has played 3 years in college, people are kind of looking down on him, right? I mean, probably people look that way about Norm, for example, playing 4 years at UCLA. Or definitely people look that way about Fred. If Fred had been as good as Fred was, but he was, you know, 19 years old, people would have definitely drafted Fred instead of him going undrafted, despite the size. But, yeah, the Raptors have done a pretty good job of drafting that later, you know, more seasoned players. Pascal is also a guy who played, what, 3 years? OG played 2 years. You know, and I think the other thing is just, part of it is just most of the freshmen that are, like, super talented get drafted mad early as well. Teams are probably more desperate because they're probably worse. That's probably why they're drafting high, and they want to take swings, and it's always a little sexier to take swings at players who are younger so that, you know, there's more of a perception of upside because of their young age. I mean, pretty much look at the whole entire Knicks roster for that. But, yeah, Xavier Tillman's, you know, he's something. I wouldn't say he's explosive. I think he needs to still improve his offense. But, you know, honestly, as far as collegiate offensive players go for big men, he's not bad. And he definitely defends really, really well. So wouldn't hate that. The Raptors do need some bigs. And then there's Zeke Nnaji, which I feel like I'm butchering the last name, so I really apologize. But 6'11", you know, center out of Arizona, 7'1 wingspan. I'd say he's kind of a post scorer. He loves the spin move, you know. Not really Pascal loving the spin move, but definitely loves the spin move. Wouldn't say he has a counter just yet in terms of, like, shooting, the turnaround jumper or anything like that, but, you know, that comes, obviously. Active, hustles hard, athletic. His defense, he's a little jumpy, and, you know, I would say he's Kenneth Reed. Kenneth Reed was definitely a way better rebounder. He came from a small college, so maybe that's why Masai was able to draft him in Denver, but, you know, I could see that kind of rebounding tenacity from Zeke. His size is good, finishes well. You know, you will have to teach him a lot of things, but, you know, good frame there. Seems like a good dude as well. I don't know. I just got a good vibe from him. And then the last guy that Raptors have spoken to, at least publicly, Jalen Smith, 6'10 center out of Maryland, I believe. Wildly athletic, can really jump, super, super fluid runner. You know, like, there are some big men that look really awkward because, you know, they're 7 feet tall and their body just looks like, you know, they're playing a game of quap rather than, you know, a sport. But he just looks like a regular person running, you know, even though he's huge. And that's always really good. Very fluid athlete in the open floor. Really loves to dunk, a little bit flashy as well. And the most intriguing thing about Jalen is that, like, he shoots the three. Like, he'll come out of screens and he'll shoot threes, which is A, very rare in the college level, and B, just rare in a big. So a guy like that, I mean, he's kind of thin in the waist, so he's a little small. Even though he's tall and he can jump, you know, he doesn't really have the bulk to sort of absorb a lot of contact, which is pretty important in defense. Just look at Mark. He's mostly bulk at this point. And, you know, if I had to compare him, maybe a little bit like Serge, I guess, you know, with that shot blocking. And, of course, Serge is a very accomplished player, so I'm not expecting that from 29th pick necessarily. But, you know, Jalen Smith, another guy I'd be happy with. So, honestly, I, in terms of predictions, I'm not going to give a prediction. It's hard to predict the draft. The 29th pick is such a wild prediction that you're making. So many things can go into it. I'm not even sure what the Raptors do. Maybe they trade up. Maybe they trade down. Who really knows? But either way, I'm looking forward to the Raptors adding new players to the team. I think the Raptors do need more young talent in the pipeline after losing a lot of it by essentially converting them into tangible players who contributed to the championship. So I'm looking forward to seeing who these players are, looking forward to these young men essentially having their entire lives changed and their entire dreams coming true. And I'm excited for it. So after the draft on Wednesday, so tomorrow, I will be doing a reaction podcast afterwards to speak on who the Raptors drafted, give you a sense of what they are, give you some news from the team. As of now, I'm going to sign off. But who knows, man? The NBA might be very busy, man. I might have to add a third part to this podcast. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to V for coming on the pod. And check back tomorrow.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.